It's time now for Homeward with Jim Burns, helping families succeed. Here now is your host, Jim Burns.
Well, sexual intimacy is one of the most common issues in marriage, maybe the least talked about in marriage. And here's an interesting fact from Shanti Feldhahn's new book. Almost 80% of couples are saying that they're mismatched in how they want sexual intimacy. Wow. You know, many times when I look out at an audience and I'm speaking on marriage, I just assume that about 50% of the people are struggling in this issue one way or another. And maybe I'm low on that, but, you know, it's an important issue. It's an important issue for us to talk about today. And today we're going to tackle that subject, secrets of sex and marriage, with my good friend Shanti Feldhahn. And if you have littles in the car and you're listening to this, then I'm going to suggest that you turn this off and listen to it at a different time. And if you're at home and there's some littles running around, that you actually put your earbuds on, and that might be helpful. Okay. Or listen to it at another time. It's too important of a subject. And I'll just be honest with you. We're going to be blunt, or you might think we're going to be blunt. We're going to be blunt, but we think we can be very, very helpful today. So my guest is Shanti Feldhahn, and I have a smile on my face because she's here. And she is a groundbreaking social researcher, best-selling author, speaker, and a mom and a wife. And after receiving a master's degree from Harvard University, just a small little school up there in the Boston area, she worked in Wall Street. And because she's analytical, she took her ability to be analytical and those skills, and she's making a difference for people to thrive and for relationships. And I love every one of her books. I think I've honestly read every book that she has. She's married to Jeff. I love Jeff. That's her husband. And they have a couple of adult children. And Shanti's recent book is called Secrets of Sex and Marriage. And she's the co-author along with Dr. Michael Sistma. Michael is a ordained pastor, a counselor, and a licensed therapist. Like I said, Shanti is one of my favorite people, but she's also my favorite Christian researcher. And I've got some friends. We have mutual friends who are researchers. So I'm saying that, you know, in a big way. Shanti, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, I'm so thrilled to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you. I have to tell you a story at the beginning, though. So last night I was speaking to a group of parents, and then I came home, and Kathy has been doing a Bible study for about 15 years, and she had all of her friends there and all the women from the Bible study, and they'd had a big Italian meal, and one of the women was leaving, so they're doing three good things and all giving gifts, and you know, there was some emotion in this. And I'm sitting in the other room. I can kind of hear it, but I'm reading your book, Secrets of Sex and Marriage, for the second time. And I'm doing my work and not paying any attention. Well, the thing was over and I missed it. And she came out, and then others started coming out and said, hey, hi, Jim. Bye, Jim. And I realized I had your book, and it actually got awkward for me. I speak on this subject. And I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe it was embarrassing for Kathy or, you know, whatever. She didn't care.
I'm going to hide the title.
Yeah, exactly. But it was awkward. Why is it awkward to speak about something so important and so God-given as sexual intimacy?
You know, that is the question of the ages, right? When it comes to marriage, one of the reasons, because you'd think like, okay, it's awkward to talk to other people about it,
yeah,
right? And it's because it's so sensitive and so sacred and so personal, which so maybe it should be awkward to some degree to raise something that's so sacred for the two of you outside your marriage. Not that you shouldn't, but that's, you know, it's good to be attuned
sure.
to that.
Sure.
Within your marriage, why is it awkward? When we were doing the research for this, because this was about a 3-year study, one of the things that we found is that everybody gets this like look on their face when you talk about this topic. And when I go, what's that look, right? Like what? And the response that was very common is, because I think I'm going to need to talk about technique. And there's this huge relief that actually comes when I say, look, the communication in this topic, what we found that matters. Okay, there's maybe a place for that. I don't know. I'm not the sex therapist. That's Dr. Seitzma. You know, I'll let him talk about that. But most of the time, it's actually about stuff that has nothing to do with that. It's all the needs and fears and worries and expectations that have nothing to do with that.
And some of that, you know, I know that I speak a lot of times on talking to your children about healthy sexuality. And I always open this way. I go, how many of you received good, positive, healthy sex education from your parents? And if the room has 400 people in it, like nine people raise their hand, right? And so one of the reasons might be because nobody really talked to us about this. And so we didn't have safe people. Our parents a lot of times weren't safe. Some were, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe that just carries over now in relationships. I don't know. Now, you talked about this study, and the study was called the Marriage Intimacy Study. And you did it for 3 years. Really an incredible research project that you did. And there were some surprises. What were just a few of the surprises for you from that study that just as a researcher that you didn't see coming? Because you've written other things on sexuality. I love all of that. But this was different. This had a different feel to it. And there were some surprises even for you.
There were. And now I should say nothing surprised Dr. Seitzma.
Seriously. Yeah. How would you like to be the kid of a sex therapist too? No offense to Dr. Seitzma.
I know.
Oh gosh, that'd be tough. My kids would go, no, please. They were embarrassed that I talked to students about sex back in my
I can imagine. We actually, part of the amusing part of this project is that we lost our summer intern who is a graduate student in this arena who was going to be doing a lot of number crunching. And our daughter was a junior in college and needed a summer internship. Right. And we're like, and she is an engineer. She's data analysis. Like, she was totally perfect for it. And we're like, can we pretend that we're not mom and daughter for the course of the summer while you're analyzing this for me? Right. It was really amusing.
That actually is funny.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So,
but when you ask about the surprises, oh my word, even things that we had studied a bit before, like some of the things that we had put in for women only and for men only. I mean, I was so surprised by how really vital and how little understood some of these surprises were. So I'll give you one example that is usually a pretty foundational thing. You know, you mentioned that almost 80% of people have a mismatch, right? It's 79% of the population. One spouse just wants more intimacy than the other.
Libido issues, lots of things.
Right. Yeah. Whatever the thing is, right? And the issue, what we found is that when that happens, which is obviously so common, most couples assume that there's only one reason why. And both people assume this, okay? Not just one or the other. Both people assume that it's because one person has a higher libido than the other, just a higher drive, right? And if you think about it, that actually puts a lot of pressure on the person who has the lower drive.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's basically by definition, there's a lot of stress there. Yeah. And what we found is that is usually actually not the case.
Interesting.
Now, it could be that they have two different sort of drives, but that's usually not the reason that they're not connecting. Mm. And usually one of the most common reasons is that there's two different types of desire. And the two different types of desire explains an enormous amount of the heartache.
So, I mean, talk about those. What are you talking about?
So think about how we expect sex to work based on everything that we see in the movies, everything that we read. Now, because remember, like we talked earlier, like we don't even talk about this topic with our closest friends,
right?
We have no grid other than what we see in the movies or whatever. And what you see is the guy and the girl, they look at each other across the room and there's a spark and there's a hunger. And pretty soon they both feel that. And pretty soon their clothes are off and they're in bed, right? Like that's just the way we think it's supposed to work. And when it doesn't work like that in our house, there's a lot of, maybe the person who wants a bit more is thinking something's broken. Like, what's wrong with you? You don't want to rip my clothes off. And and the person who maybe wants a little bit less or doesn't have that same, kind of attitude and that hunger, they're like, what's wrong with me? Both people think one person is broken.
That's
and instead, what we found is that kind of Hollywood view, that is one type of desire. Called intentional desire. You could call it initiating, intentional, whatever. We call it initiating desire.
In the book, you talked about another desire too.
But that's the second type. And the second type is called receptive desire. And here was what just threw me, even though I've been working with this kind of arena for 20 years, right? I did not know until this project that receptive desire works physiologically in the reverse order. The person with receptive desire, which by the way is 73% of women.
Interesting.
Okay. Big number, right? The person with receptive desire, they don't feel that same sense of hunger. They don't feel that. They're making a decision to get engaged with their spouse in that way. Now, knowing that it's, you know, going to be good eventually, and, you know, this isn't coercion, and this is just, you know, I know because of how such and such is wired, this is just how it's going to work. Right. So that person who has a receptive desire, they make a decision. And then as they start getting engaged with their spouse, assuming that it's a positive experience and all of that, then their physiology starts getting stimulated. And then they start feeling that sense of desire that maybe their spouse felt 10 minutes ago. And that one thing, knowing, oh, this is a physiological difference, is so, so relieving and empowering and freeing.
Yeah.
Because it takes it off of the something's broken. And it's like, no, actually nothing's broken. This is just the way the two of us are wired.
No, that's very helpful. You know, so many times I think people, you know, they look at the honeymoon as that moment that you described in the movies, and might be even. But again, I say to people, over the years, if you do this right, your sexual intimacy will be even much more meaningful as you learn to share. And that's one of the things you were talking about. Now, what do you say to the person who is listening, watching on YouTube, and they're struggling? I mean, and they have some past issues. I mean, it could be anything from sexual abuse, as so many of the women that you work with when you're speaking at a women's conference. It could be sexual abuse. It could be baggage. It could be so many other issues, maybe deep heartache from something that had taken place in the marriage.
Absolutely.
What do you say to them? I mean, is there hope for them?
Oh, so much hope. One of the things that was so encouraging when Jeff and I were doing a bunch of the interviews, Jeff, my husband, and I were doing a bunch of the interviews for this. And I I should explain how we did the interviews just really briefly, because it's one of these topics that you don't talk about again. And so the way we did it, in order to get kind of candid, like honest responses from couples, is we actually did them anonymously over Zoom with their cameras blacked out. So like our cameras were on so they could see us and talk to us, but theirs was blocked out and they had a fake name, right? Like, so Wanda and Vision or Farm Boy and Buttercup, right? Like they chose a name.
I want to be Buttercup if I ever get in any of your research.
Yeah.
I've never been Buttercup.
But one of the things that we heard that was so encouraging is that there were several of these couples that were part of this anonymous data set that had gone through really, really significant heartache. We had a much higher than in the general population percentage of people who had had sexual abuse, et cetera, in their past, some significant abuse or dysfunction. And because it was a higher number than we were expecting to go, oof, like, how are we going to manage the data analysis because that's not representative? And, you know, we just didn't know. And I was concerned that it would end up being discouraging, like some of the stuff that we found in that section of the data before we got to the national, because we eventually do these nationally representative surveys and stuff. But when we actually looked at it, it was the reverse of discouraging, because so many of those couples, what they had to share was that they had come through that and out the other side.
Well, that's really neat.
And it was, we were asking, what are the little things that matter? Right? Like that's all what we were trying to do, is what are the simple things that you wouldn't know mattered that really matter? Like what we were just saying, that there's these two different types of desire.
Yeah, no, that's really good. It was interesting as I read through your book, it's actually the second time I've read it because you'd sent it to me when it was just out. And then I looked at it again, preparing for our conversation. And one of the things that jumped out at me was you say people who are able to talk about sex with their spouse tend to have significantly more sex.
Yes. Yes. This when we looked at the data and we started crunching, again, this was the nationally representative survey. And we did two of them, actually. And one was what's called a matched pair survey. And so that was particularly valuable because it was husbands and wives who were married to each other. Now, we didn't know who they were. Their answers were independent. They didn't know what each other was answering. But we knew who, you know, husband 31 was married to wife 31. And one of the things that was really surprising, but it's like, okay, this makes sense, is that when that husband and that wife could, in some reasonable way, have a conversation about this topic and have the conversation about what's going on under the surface, for example, and share what really mattered to them and share if, like, you know, I feel like we're not connecting and I don't want to be with you when we're not connected, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
They were far more likely by an order of magnitude to actually be intimate once a week or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that ended up being an interesting, literally statistically, ended up being an interesting signal of all sorts of other things that came down to, wow, are they talking about it or not?
Yeah. Yeah, I encourage couples to have to talk. And sometimes it is awkward. It's weird to have some because we're not used to it. But I find that, you know, when we're looking at developing intimacy, you know, oftentimes emotional intimacy precedes physical intimacy, especially for a woman. So the man has to talk and listen or whatever. But I say, if you're not willing to talk about sex, then that's not intimate. And, but if you do, that's, there's an intimacy about it. Even if it's something that you're struggling with,
yes,
it's still a good thing to say. That's I appreciate you saying
well,
that.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, think about it. Like the whole reason it's awkward is that it's so personal. Well, you're opening about something that's personal to you, to the person who cares the most about knowing the inner you. So that's the reason that it matters.
Well,
so
when you say that, even, you know, I've been in a small group for 23 years and I'm a better husband, father, Christ follower because of these amazing men. We don't talk about sex. I mean, we work around it. Nobody has like a major issue with it in terms of, you know, people.
Well,
I think
you don't know, right?
No,
like,
I don't,
you don't
know. But I think they're pretty comfortable, you know, with some of the conversation, but we don't talk about, that's a subject that, it's not like it's taboo. We could probably talk about it. We just don't. We're a bunch of guys and, you know, yet we're really intimate about other issues that we talk about.
Jeff has been in a men's group for a lot of years. And he told us when we were starting the research for this, I'm like, do you guys ever like talk about it? He's like, the closest we get to talking about it is, there's not a lot of action going on in our house right now.
Right.
Oh,
Right.
No. What's next on the agenda?
No. What's next? Yeah. What's the other prayer request? Oh, well, you got a big business deal going on. But you're
exactly.
Right. It is interesting. Now, I want to talk about atmosphere in a relationship because what people have said to me a lot of times is, you know, I'm not drawn to sexual intimacy because my spouse, male or female, they're so negative. There's tension. They're not. Setting a good atmosphere, the tone, the spirit. What do you say to that? Did you see that? Did people say that?
Oh, yes, we did. And actually, we've seen this in pretty much all of our research over 20 years, not just this study. But it's one of those things that you think of it as being primarily about the wife. And it's actually not just about the wife. I had one guy in the research, he said, look, you know, my wife criticizes me all day and then wants to be together. And I'm like, you're emasculating me all day. And then you want me to perform at night? Like, it doesn't work that way. And I mean, that's a relatively extreme example, but it happens. And so one of the things that we, if you flip then to the other side of things and you say to the men, one of the other things that is a pretty significant difference is that hormonally, it turns out men are much more likely when they're, it's, let's say it's not a, not an extreme situation, right? Like, it's not that their wife is criticizing them all day long, right? It's just the normal tension of life. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is pretty common is that men, when they feel that distance, they automatically crave connection. Well, for men, the chemicals and the hormones, the sexual chemicals that are released during sex are actually the ones that bond them with their wife. For women, those chemicals can be released at many different times. Like, you can have a really significant, deep conversation with a close friend. You can be holding your baby. You can be whatever, and you're getting those kind of bonding hormones released. With men, it happens at one time, and that's when they're with their wife in that way. And so when they're feeling distant and they instantly, they're like, I want to be connected to you in the bedroom. And the wife is like, excuse me, like, we've argued and you haven't been with me all day and, you know, we're at odds. Let's solve that first. And then we can be connected in the bedroom. And so understanding that difference is really important, because then I always tell the husbands, in addition to the wives, make sure that she understands that the reason that you're trying to connect isn't that you're demanding. It's not that you're not caring about what was going on between you. It's because you care. And that actually helps a lot.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Listen, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back. Shanti Feldhahn with us. When we come back, I'm going to actually ask about scheduling sex, because she wrote about this and it sounds so unromantic, but it sounds like it's a really good idea. So we'll be right back. I'm Jim Burns. You're listening to Homeward.
Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the country, helping families with issues like creating a media-safe home, doing life with your adult children, building healthy morals and values, energizing your family's spiritual life, and so much more. Your church or organization can sponsor a seminar that fits your needs. Go to homeward.com to find out more. Be sure to check out more family ministry topics on their website at homeward.com. That's Homeward, H-O-M-E-W-O-R-D.
Welcome back. We're talking with Shanti Feldhahn about, well, her new book, Secrets of Sex and Marriage. Great subtitle, 8 Surprises That Make a Difference. And go buy that book. I mean, you can tell by this conversation, this book would be helpful and beneficial to you. You can get the book wherever books are sold, but you can also go to shanti.com. I love her website. And I love the fact that her name, Shanti, she doesn't even need her last name, Feldhahn, in it, because it's just shanti.com. It's a great, great website. It has just a lot of good stuff for you, and other books that are just wonderful. One year, I told Shanti this a number of years ago, but one year, I, instead of giving to the board at Homeward, one of my books, I gave them for women only and for men only, because I just thought they were so good. Nobody ever says, thank you for your books, Jim. They go, hey, what was that? You know, that book, it was life-changing for me. It was Shanti's book. So anyway, great to have her back. And Shanti, I want to ask you about, I mentioned the right before the break, I wanted to ask you about scheduling sex. One of the things that, you know, when we talk about the busyness of life, you suggested and found this in terms of even the research, that if somebody would schedule sex, now I think there's a lot of people who would say, wait, it's supposed to be spontaneous, but you're saying if you schedule it, it's really a good idea for many people.
It actually is. You know how we talked about the 2 different types of desire?
Yeah.
And how you have this physiological difference and you have initiating desire and you have receptive desire, right? Well, it turns out that one of the solutions to that is scheduling. Because if you're not, like, if one person is not thinking about it, because that's the deal, right? The receptive desire person just isn't thinking about it. And suddenly they know, okay, it's like, okay, every Wednesday night, the kids go to Bible study. They're out at the church. So every Wednesday night is our night, or whatever it is. And suddenly you're thinking about it. And it completely changes the dynamic. It gives the receptive desire person what we call anticipation time. And it's a way for a couple to know that you're gonna connect. And one of the things that Dr. Seitzma, who, you know, is a sex therapist that we wrote the book with, he and actually pretty much all other sex therapists out there, they really highly recommend this. And they say, if you can, try to schedule it once a week, because a lot of good things tend to follow in the relationship, and candidly in sexual desire, when you're generally engaged about once a week or more.
Yeah, no, that's something real. That's a great idea, actually. And you and I have a friend, I'm not going to say the name because it was private toward me, but I was speaking at an event. I've actually told this on the podcast before, but I was speaking at an event and the woman, I was having breakfast with them and Kathy was actually there, but she was still sleeping. And she said, oh, I'm going to your session on teaching your children healthy sexuality. She goes, you know, we have sex every Wednesday. You mentioned the word Wednesday. And he's a pastor of one of the larger churches and you know this church. And he kind of went, he stopped in mid, you know, putting the eggs into his mouth or whatever. And went, I can't believe you just told Jim that story, right?
That's awesome.
I said, well, tell me about that. But what was interesting is they said, we look forward to it every time. And I said, wait, I've been at your church Wednesdays. You have 2,000 people in an auditorium where you speak. I'm looking at the pastor and he goes, yeah, you know how I'm always like long-winded? I'm never long-winded on Wednesday anymore. they just laughed. But that was a neat thing to see.
That is neat.
Five
yeah.
kids later. And yeah. and I even... You know, I said, well, why just, they go, I don't even know why we chose Wednesday. It was just it was a good day. So here we go. But anyway, scheduling sex is a great, great idea. I love this quote by you in the book. It says, sex was designed to teach us about God, about ourselves, and about our relationship with each other. Mm. What did that mean?
One of the things that was so special about this project and working with Dr. Seitzma is that he's not just a sex therapist, he's a pastor. Yeah. And so he kept wanting to, because I'm like all practical, like I want to help you to communicate around this topic. And he's like, yes, but what does this mean in terms of the heart and our relationship with God and our relationship with one another? Mm. And one of the things that he brought up that I guess I had probably known, you know, had heard in years past, is that when you look at how sexual intimacy is described in the Bible, yeah. and you look at all of the ways that there's actually a sense of, I mean, we all know the connection between Christ and his church and the connection between a husband and wife is sort of paralleled, right? Like this idea of really, really intimate connection. And one of the ways it's described in the Old Testament is when it says Adam knew his wife. Hmm. Yeah. That word is not just a euphemism. It's the word yada in Hebrew. Hmm. And there is this really powerful thing that's captured with that of we know yeah. one another in the most intimate way possible.
Yeah.
And that knowing is one of the things that looks like God designed for us to have this kind of connection that we don't have with anybody else. And it's sacred.
Yeah. And I remember reading it in your book and I kind of smiled because when I was, I wasn't raised in the church. And then when I became a youth pastor, I remember somebody saying this no, and I had just gotten married to Kathy. And I was like, whoa, that is
wow.
deep.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, when we're talking about intimacy, that's what intimacy is. And, you know, when yeah. Jesus even said, you know, a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife. That means yeah. bonded. That means to know your spouse. And that's good news because we can work on, like you say, you could come from a tough situation and you can learn to know. Somebody once said to me, Neil Clark Warren said to me, who was kind of a mentor in my life. He said, communication is a learned trait, and part of sexuality is communication. And so we can learn to know. I mean, I know Kathy at this stage in our marriage all these years a lot better than I knew her at the beginning. And yeah. and that's in every form. And yeah. so we sometimes just think of the act of sex, but there's so much more to that. Now, I'm going to take you back about 10 years. This is not with your book, but you were speaking at an event for Homeward, and I took you into a room, and there was another guy there who, you know, was also a researcher and a wonderful man, one of my dear friends. And there had been a rumor about, you know, that many years ago or more that, you know, 50% of Christians got divorced and whatnot. And you said, no, that's not the case because of your research.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to hear that. And I want you to tell our listeners what your research said about Christians, because again, Christians get divorced and Christians have problems all the same.
Of course.
And sexuality, absolutely. But some of your research from the past, I think, blends with what you're doing in this book.
It does.
Talk about that. You remember the time?
I totally remember that. I'm like, I cannot believe you are setting me up to have this conversation with this guy that I am publicly like saying he's kind of being misquoted. He's kind of,
I remember that time.
Yeah. So here's the reality that I think will be encouraging to everybody, all the Christians, and candidly, all the pastors who have heard this, leave this, which to them, it means all my work doesn't mean very much, right? If the rate of divorce is the same here as it is out there, right? So it turns out that that is based on a major misunderstanding of some data from the Barna Group back 20 something years ago. Everybody thinks that the Barna Group found that the rate of divorce is the same in the church, and they didn't, because they were not studying people in the church. Mm-hmm. They were studying belief systems. And when you call people on the phone and ask, you know, are you Christian? Are you Jewish? Are you Muslim? Are you atheist? Whatever. Those groups do have the same divorce rate. But the Barna Group specifically excluded church attendance from the analysis because wasn't what they were trying to study.
Yeah.
And so I actually partnered with the Barna Group, and I bought that data set, and we reran all the numbers with that one factor added back in of, you know, was the person in church last week?
Right.
And according, by the way, to the Barna Group data that we were rerunning, and pretty much every other study that's ever been done, which is not hyperbole, this is accurate, the divorce rate for churchgoers plummets. And it falls anywhere from, depending on the study, 25 to 50%.
Wow.
And some studies, there was a study out of Harvard 2 years ago, I think, that found it went down 58%. And it's the key is, are we making church a part of our life?
Right.
Demographers, secular demographers, will argue all day long about divorce rates and this and that and the other. But it's really interesting when it comes to this, there's no argument.
Yeah.
They all know that for churchgoers, for people who make faith a part of their life as a Christian, it's a hugely bonding and a hugely protective thing. And you're right, it does impact this topic that we're talking about of intimacy.
Right.
Because you're having intimacy, not just with one another, but with God.
Yeah, it's so important. And you know, there's sometimes people will take that scripture. I quoted it. It was Matthew 19:4, Jesus speaking out of the Old Testament. But he said, you know, man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. Well, in some ways, that is God and intimacy and our spouse and intimacy. Those are the two most intimate relationships we can have. You can pull those together. Yeah. So what I learned from you was that just if a couple will say, look, we're going to go to church, we're going to worship. I mean, we want to worship more, but if we're worship two times a month, that really changes things.
It does, statistically. And one of the things that I would encourage people to do is recognize that there are several things in the data that make church attendance so important. You know, things like, you know, listening to good teaching, trying to get closer to God personally, you know, all that, being in community. But it's also, there's something there that's a mystery. There's something there that's just a supernatural thing that God does.
Yeah. Yeah. And I surely understand that. I was thinking last Sunday, I was sitting next to Kathy, and then I was standing when we were worshiping, and I felt really close to her. And, you know, I watched her. She was having her own moment. She wasn't paying any attention to me. And I just went, I feel so close. And I was a pastor for many, many years. And so I didn't get that opportunity as often as I wanted. But just being next to her, watching her in her relationship with God and worship, and we go to a similar church type background that you do, where there's going to be great worship. And I love to worship, but I love doing it with her.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it draws me closer together. Kathy, if she was here and we were talking about marriage, we're going to do a marriage conference here pretty quick together. And she oftentimes says, if you pray together, that's sexy. I don't see that as sexy, but for her, praying with me is sexy. Okay. And that's a good thing because I don't look all that sexy, but you know, it's interesting how that is. It's one of the five sex needs of women in a book called The Five Sex Needs of Men and Women by Gary Rosberg and his wonderful wife. And I think how interesting that, you know, in sexual intimacy and intimacy with God go hand in hand. I want to encourage, you know, many of the people who listen to this, most of them are probably Christians. They know that I'm a Christian, but there's a lot of people who don't. And I want to encourage them to actually, you know, consider leaning into their faith. And I'm not going to say that just because you go to church now, oh, you're going to have great sex spark, you know, back to the movie right. illustration that Shanti talked about. But the fact is that it can enhance your relationship. And what's great about it is people like yourself who research this stuff, you have it documented as opposed to us just kind of going, oh, go to church, you'll have a better marriage. You know,
and it does matter. I mean, it just statistically it does. And if I could just give one encouragement, right? You were talking about the actual book, right? One of the things that we encourage people to do, and it helps with all of the above. It helps with all of the issues of what's going on in this under the surface and the intimate life that we have and in our relationship with God and in our relationship with each other. We encourage people to read the book to one another, to like literally go through it and be like, stop and say, is that true of you? Is that really how you think? Or, you know, you learn, you know what, actually here, the 80% said this, 20% said this, you know, I'm actually in the 20%. That's not accurate of me. I'm a little bit different. And oh, tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. And it is so, and it doesn't even have to be our book, but pick a book on this topic, a Christian book written by somebody who has like the training, like Dr. Seitzema, the sex therapist, because it will help you so much in your communication and your intimacy and your relationship.
Yep. I totally agree with you. Kathy and I had that early in our marriage. We read a book by the Penners, who you know, mm-hmm. Cliff and Joyce, and we read it out loud. We were on our way to a ski trip with kids, but we were in a separate car and we're laughing going, the conversation we're having is really different than the conversation these high school kids are having that we're going to go on. But it was wonderful. And so again, I say you pick up Secrets of Sex and Marriage by Shanti. It's a great book and it's a research book. So if you've got a spouse who is analytical or whatever, this is the kind of book you want to read because it gives great research and then it gives the answers. I really appreciate you being with us today.
Aww,
Shanti, thank you. You're just awesome. I'm going to come back and I want to go through every piece of your content so that our listeners can get that. So thanks so much for being with us. And again, the book is called Secrets of Sex and Marriage, 8 Surprises That Make All the Difference. And you can get it at Shanti.com, but you can also get it anywhere books are sold and get to know Shanti. If she's new to you, and she probably isn't to a lot of you, but if she is, then get to know her. She is worth spending time with, following, and really one of the more wonderful people in the universe. Thank you so much.
You're so sweet, Jim. Thanks.
So if you need help, and many of us do, you can go to secretsofsexandmarriage.com and you can get a lot of help. There's lots of resources there. Hey, before you go, let me just say a couple of things. I want to talk more about sexual intimacy, just kind of review what we've been thinking about, because I think this is so key for us. First of all, and I said it before, but if there is no emotional intimacy in a relationship, then there's really little sexual intimacy. You can have sex and not be intimate. You know that. But I really want to suggest that you make sure that you are not the parent to your spouse and that, you know, you're not always correcting them, but literally you're their cheerleader and that you listen. Listening is the language of love. I find that what Kathy thinks is sexy is different than what I think is sexy sometimes, but it's definitely listening, and listening is the language of love. And as I mentioned, the other thing I would just simply say is that make sure you do have time to talk about this. And if this is uncomfortable, so just take a baby step, but have that conversation. Your spouse should be the safest person you can have a conversation with about your intimate relationship. And so I suggest you do that. A couple of other things. One is I want to say that foreplay, when was the last time you heard that word? But foreplay begins before you get to the bedroom. And you know what? You're married, for goodness sakes. Flirt. And it's not just groping men, not groping men, but men groping your wife. But it is flirting, and it's caring. It's kissing. You know, studies show that if somebody will kiss for 15 seconds, that plays a big difference. That's intimate. There's even a movie, an old movie, where the prostitute in the movie said, oh, I don't kiss my clients. I'll have sex with them, but kissing is way too intimate. And you know what? Kiss your spouse. Spend time doing that. I just want to encourage that. Initiate. Women, tell your husband in the morning, hey, you got a chance here tonight. You know, and what is he going to think about the whole day? He's going to be thinking about that. And you didn't make a promise, but you did, you know, initiate a little bit. And then men, you need to initiate. You need to initiate with touch. Touch the vacuum, touch the folding laundry, touch the iron. If you iron, you know, touch and help out, because a woman's life a lot of times needs to be partly together. And so if life's been chaotic and whatnot, she's not going to be ready for you. But if you come alongside and help, that's a big thing. And then also lastly, handle the delicate problems with care and with counsel. You know, the Bible says that where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And I want to encourage you, if you're struggling in this area, then get some help. Talk to somebody. You know what? There's people who are out there who can help you in a big way. And usually it's a sex therapist or something. There are great people today. There's resources. You can do it online if you can't, if there's nobody in your area. Now, we don't have the kind of studies that Shanti has, but at Homeward, in our Refreshing Your Marriage conferences with Doug Fields and myself and whoever else we have speaking at the time, you know, we did some studies a while back where we asked people, what are your top sex and passion killers? And I'm going to read them to you and then I'm going to quit. But number one is exhaustion and stress. Okay. And this is in the order in which we got it. People are just said, you know what? I want to be intimate, but I'm just exhausted and I'm filled with stress. And that means that sometimes our priorities aren't in place, or it's the time of the season with the age of our kids, but exhaustion, stress. Which of these relate to you? And you may want to share this with your spouse. Lack of physical affection, flirting, intimate conversation. They want that. People crave that. Too much to do. I mean, they're just too busy. Somebody once said to me, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. Where sometimes our busyness gets in the way of not only our relationship with God, but our relationship with our spouse, of course. Emotional distance, or even an intense conflict. A lot of people put that down. Lack of emotional or physical safety. I didn't see that one coming so quick up on our list, but it was there. Feeling underappreciated, negativity, constant criticism, and was another one, of course. And then the plumbing wasn't working. You know what's the good news about all this? Is all of those sex and passion killers can be worked on and can improve, but you're going to have to lean into it. You're going to have to humble yourself. You're going to have to put yourself out there and have that conversation. It's been a great podcast. It's been so wonderful to have Shanti with us. One woman wrote us recently and said this: you were mentoring me through difficult time in my marriage and family. That's what we want to do. Thank you for writing that. You can always go to our voice line and ask a question, or you can make a comment. You can write us at homewardinfo@homeward.com. And we'll read it all and we'll listen to it all. So again, thanks so much for being a part of this podcast. And until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for listening. Homeward, helping families succeed.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Homeward with Jim Burns. Be sure to check out Jim's latest books, courses, and blogs at homeward.com. While you're there, you can book Jim for your next speaking event. Just click on the seminar request tab and fill out the information. Take some time to scroll around and see all of the resources we have available for you to help your family succeed. Once again, all of this can be found at homeward.com. Also, be sure to follow Jim and Homeward on all their social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another edition of Homeward with Jim Burns. Homeward with Jim Burns, helping families succeed.